Say, what do you have here in your drugstore? Do you have anything that we can use to sterilize?
What do you want to sterilize?
Operating equipment. Let me just say this right away. I'm not a doctor.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to perform an operation, or what you'd call an operation, on this man. I think I read enough about the thing that I can do it.
I've agreed.
The only problem is getting the stuff sterilized.
I'll tell you this much, now, legally, whether you agree or not, you could be in trouble.
I'm not going to press any charges.
If anything happens, I mean, you're not going to go.
I hope it's not of a serious nature.
Fella.
I'll explain it to you. I'm going into his chest. He's got a pain there. And frankly speaking, he isn't of such economic posture that he can go to a doctor. And I'm just going to go in and look.
Wouldn't you qualify for a county hospital?
I don't want to have anything to do with the city or the state or anything. He's a good friend of mine. We got quite a few books from a medical library. We've read up on the subject, and I really feel that he's competent to handle it.
How high is your education going? May I ask you this question formally?
Yes, third year high school. I have finished the third year high school.
Now, you know, there's something in law called, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it means a friend of the court. Sometimes there's a person comes in, he's on nobody's side. He's a friend of the court to help, you know?
Yeah. Sure.
And in this particular case, I would 1,000% advise you against it.
We're just going to do it now. We're going to do it in a station wagon and just get the thing over with. He has a pain in his chest that's been bothering him. He's located the area. I'm going to open the area up, and probably just by looking at it, I'll be able to see something wrong. I have enough equipment to light it up. Just press something.
Custom made. Homebrew, baby. Roth Radio. Pulling the plug. 866-313-3733. April. April, May. Get it? April, you're on. Number six, Roth Radio, Superstar Live. April, are you with me? Bring the music down there, Hutch. April, you're on.
How you doing?
Talk to me about euthanasia, sweetie.
Oh, let me tell you. I'm a nurse.
What kind of a nurse are you?
LPN and long-term care facility.
Okay. Where the average age is deceased?
Yes.
I've made a few...
Or they're trying to keep them alive for the money, you know.
I do. Go ahead.
Take them a tube feed, you know, keep them up. My best friend was killed when she was 17, declared brain dead after 11 days. They unplugged her, which I agree with. I have four kids, 22, 17, 15, and 7. None of them want to be kept alive. Like, you know, if there's no hope, let them go.
You know what?
Absolutely.
Just a little humor aside here. How would you be able to tell if an average 17-year-old was brain dead?
Well, they said they brought a specialist in from Minnesota. And it's the neurological brain activity, and she was down below 11%.
And 11% is where the average is, and that's considered no nominal activity. Is that correct?
Correct.
And are
no
you
hope, and if she ever did regain consciousness, which would be, you know, a 1% chance, she would be a permanent vegetable, so...
And do you think if people want to do this, if people want to slide away like that, is that okay? Or do you think people need to be retrieved, April?
Oh, no. Let them slide. Thank God for morphine and Kevorkian. He's wonderful. They should have never put him in jail.
You know, my mother's been in bed for probably 10 weeks now. She's not doing too good, and she's in one of these facilities here. And my sisters and I have been going around about this because she doesn't want to do rehab. She doesn't want to get out of bed. She doesn't want to work. You know, she's a Roth. She's completely irascible. She knows better than everybody else. She's in her mid-70s. And I said to my sister, hey, if she wants to take Vicodin and watch TV and pass out of the building, then that's her option. If I even make it to 75 years old, you better not pry my hand open or turn off the television set. And I have family members who argue with this, that no, she should be retrieved, that there we should make more effort. And I'm on the fence there, because from what I tell from mom, she doesn't want to come back. She's kind of had it. Like my grandmother said when she was 88, honey, I can't see the TV, I can't taste my food, and I'm frankly tired of talking to your cousins. And that was a quote.
It's a dignity issue.
That was a quote.
You want people to go out like that. That's awful.
Yep. Grandma Roth was 99 years old when she passed, and she was having heart problems. Come on, you have every kind of problem if you make it to 100 years old. She was in a hospital down in Miami, and one of the last times that I visited her, Dr. Lavinia, you know, was a South American doctor, great physician, great heart surgeon, was in there. And grandma's last real words as I was leaving, I said, "Okay, grandma, I'll be back in a couple of days." She said, "Yeah, Dr. La Peña in my ass. I don't want you to come back, please." And a few days later, she left the building. And, her funeral was a sad thing, but not quite as sad, because I think grandma wanted out. Both my grandmothers did. And so I use this as kind of my working template. But you're all for it, huh, April?
Absolutely.
I see the
people suffer every day. And a lot of these people that are against it, they need to go into the hospitals and the nursing homes and look at these people. And they're just existing.
It's a warehouse.
It's not a life. It's an existence, and it's unfair.
It's a warehouse, and I've had the unlucky privilege of, in some of my EMT experiences, to wander through a lot of the public facilities where nobody has any cash, where the average age is deceased. My first save, CPR save, was an 80-year-old woman who had gone on. And the first thing I thought was, everybody else in the room is on ventilators. Everybody else in there is making noises.
We have
and
more money. Honey,
yep.
You get more money if they're a 2-feet event. And you know, it's a racket.
Yeah.
But if people can have a medical POA, their power of attorney, someone that they can trust, you know, have your DNR, DNRCC, or DNRCC arrest, you know, plan ahead, because you never know.
Boy, you do know. They're going to try and they're going to fight over you. You do know. April, thank you for calling. Roth Radio, New York, Philly, Dallas, Boston, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, West Palm Beach. Bob. You might have a contrasting view here. Staying alive? Staying alive. Hey, a little musical aside there. Roth Radio, you're in the spotlight. Go ahead.
Am I on?
You are completely on, my friend. Go ahead.
Hey, I don't want anybody to put me away. I want my body froze. I figure a few hours after I'm dead, they're going to come up with some sort of stem cell cure that's going to bring me back to life.
I like the way you think. So you want to go cryogenically like Walt Disney.
You better believe it.
Well, wait, he's not far off base, because with the way that technology, you know, and the bionic forms of medicine, stem cell research, all of these in vitro this and embryonic that and so forth, that ultimately he may have a point, Robin.
Well, as long as the religious right is ruling the country, there's never going to be any stem cell research.
Would you speak to that? Go ahead.
Actually, I'm hoping they'll be able to transplant my brain into a body like Brad Pitt or something like that.
Well, you know, if you're going to use metaphysical abstractions like that, wouldn't you rather have your brain transferred into Angelina's body and then play with yourself for the rest of your life?
Never have to leave the house.
No,
not that. That's sick.
That would make me gay.
If God made anything better than a woman, he kept it for himself, let me tell you.
I like the way you think. Thanks, Bob. God bless. 866-313-3733. Also, davidleeroth.com. We're international here, the davidleerothshow.com. You can find either way. And you can send us in the emails on that, davidleeroth.com. Email us if you have a thought or a vision or a recrimination. I'm not sure what that even means, but if you have one, this is the place for you. Phil, you're on. Go ahead, Phil. David Lee. You're in the spotlight, Phil.
Okay, listen, I'm all for the pulling of the plug.
Sure.
Because 20 years ago, my mom, she was terminally ill.
Okay.
And she was suffering from cancer, and it finally reached her pancreas. And she languished for 6 months, and every day she kept saying, "I wish somebody would put me out of my misery."
And did somebody?
Well, no. The last week of her life, she ended up in the hospital on machines, and the whole family, we basically were pleading with the doctor to just pull the plug, and he basically, well, actually, you had something to do with this, actually, 20 years ago, because I spoke with you about this. You were on
I'm taking
tour.
You seriously here. Go ahead.
You were on tour, and it was up in Worcester.
Okay.
And you were on tour with Cinderella, and I had won a pair of backstage passes, and it was about a week and a half before my mom passed away, and you actually spoke with me about this, and you had said that I was basically being selfish, not wanting her to go on, to pass on, because of her suffering.
And are you sure?
Yes.
This doesn't sound like me, my friend, but go ahead.
That was you. And when we spoke with the doctors, and the doctors basically said, well, we're trying to save her life. And we're like, no, you're not trying to save her life. You're just prolonging her life. And part of the Hippocratic Oath says to ease pain and suffering, correct?
Understood, sure.
But basically, we were in a situation, she had no insurance, we were trying to take care of this on our own. And it got to the point where I had a brother whose friend was diabetic and took insulin. And he was practically begging him for a syringe.
Okay, you know what? I think I do remember this conversation because I've had conversations like this before and I give the same answer. You may have mistranslated. You know, there's been some years in passage here. What I said to you, I truly believe because I know I've dealt with this subject many, many times. I've been in and around the medical industry many, many years here.
Right.
In small bit player, small time, but around it. Grew up around it in my family. Yeah. I think probably what I was reflecting on is that it's selfish if you are going to force somebody to stay alive who doesn't want to be there or who shouldn't be there. That certainly makes a little more sense. That sounds a little bit more like me. Does reacquaint me, though.
I'll tell you, when I had spoken with you, it was before she passed away, it started to make me realize that, you know, basically, there's no sense in letting somebody just languish like that. I mean, if they're suffering...
I think it's selfish if you do let them languish because you're afraid to carry that guilt on your shoulders or the onus or whatever. That if you let somebody languish, that's an act of aggression. And that, I do truly do believe, is selfish.
One thing I think is kind of ironic, though, these people who are against the pulling of the plug and everything,
yep,
they'd have no hesitation putting down a pet dog or cat, the majority of them.
Robin has a thought on that.
You know, I'm sitting here, I'm starting to well up because I'm thinking that the worst day of my life was, I'm a big animal lover, and I have many animals, and the first time when it was time for my cat to go, and you know, he was wobbling, and I just knew, and it was so hard to have to make that decision, to have to make that phone call and have a doctor come to my house.
And that's just a cat.
And that's just a cat.
Robin, if that was the worst day of your life, you're a pretty lucky person.
Sure. You made out really well. Did you actually have the cat put down?
I had to have the cat put down, and you
and
know,
it still rattles you, doesn't
it? And this was years ago.
And it still rattles you.
And I'm still crying over it.
Why is that?
The pain of having to be that person.
Can you imagine the pain of the doctor who has to be that person, who has to do that more than once? Those are the individuals who will intervene. We keep pointing to Washington. We keep pointing to the church. That's not who's going to intervene. You're talking about an individual who's experiencing tenfold what you're experiencing for a house pet.
Well, to me, it wasn't just a house pet. And
sorry
the doctors,
to call it a house
well,
pet.
Well, the doctors don't have an emotional relationship with these people. And ultimately, won't it fall to the pharmacists?
Do you think you have an emotional relationship with that house pet?
Are you kidding me? Absolutely.
No, a relationship means two ways. Answer again.
Yes, I do.
Or do you think that house pet was coming to you and looked like love, but it was more like looking for food?
Oh, no.
No, it loved you and it understood you.
I had this cat for 17 years. It knew my voice. It knew my smell. It, you know, if
you were the bringer of food.
If you put me in a room and you in a room, the cat would come to me.
Because it knows that you're the provider of food.
Well, you're obviously not an animal lover.
I love animals to death, and I've had way more than you ever had.
I'm not even going to argue with you.
Way more than you ever had. What you are thinking of...
Yeah, but your kind of animals are different than my kind of animals.
James Addiction lyric, if you want a friend, feed any animal.
No, that's what animals do, is there's the appearance of love, and there is the appearance of companionship, but 9 times out of 10, that animal is looking for sustenance. It's looking for survival, and you become that matriarch.
I'm not even going to argue with you on this. I think you're so wrong. I mean, absolutely, that's a part of it, and the animal knows to come to me for food, and I will always be there for it, but to think that there's not some sort of a connection there. And personally, I don't really like people that much, and animals are very good replacements for that.
Couldn't disagree with you more. Ronnie, number 6, 866-313-3733. God and euthanasia. Talk to me, Ronnie. Roth Radio.
What's up, Dave? How are you, bro?
Go ahead. You're on.
Listen, man, I just want to tell you that I think what you're doing is awesome. I've been listening to it since you got on the air. And the whole euthanasia thing, man, I just think like 50, 60 years ago, people just died, man. These machines are just making the medical profession more money. I think it's all farce.
Also, I think that the machines maintain a life expectancy to a degree where perhaps an intervention can be done medically, that a doctor can intervene at a later stage than ever before. But what they used to do 50, 60 years ago, and if you were in a coma or if you were out of whack for a period of time, then the night nurse would simply leave one of the windows open about 6 inches and you would catch pneumonia and pass into the ether. Are you aware of that kind of practice?
Not at all, man.
No, that was the routine, man. I learned about that from a surgical nurse who had been in combat in Korea and Vietnam, and she was my instructor when I became a surgical orderly. I worked in surgery for several years down in the barrio in Southern California, and that's how I learned all of those old-school practices. That's Norman Rockwell-era kind of euthanasia, and that's routinely what would happen because the burden of having a protracted illness 50 years ago was exponential compared to what was happening today. Do you think that would be a reasonable approach? Would you accept that for a loved one if you thought they were irretrievable?
That seems a little cruel. I got to tell you, Dave, you're so well-spoken, dude. You amaze me, man.
Well, I'm going to take that as a compliment.
To your records, man. It's just like you're amazing that you can talk without even slurring your words. Howard can't even talk that long.
Well, we have different focuses. You know, I respect Howard and what he approaches. And I've if nothing else, I'm a professional waiter. I wait for the bus. I wait for the plane. I wait for the show. I wait for the gig. And during that, I watch a lot of television. I read a lot of books. I read a lot of magazines. And I speak to a lot of folks. I've sat around a lot of campfires, literally, with a Coleman lantern going just around the circle as we do here. And this is the subject matter. This is the stuff of life here. I've been looking forward to doing a gig like this and talking about stuff like this for a very long time. I'm fascinated that you would be surprised. You mean from
well, you know what it is, dude? I'm used to you. Like, remember that Don Kirshner interview when you came out dressed like the horse jockey? That's the way you used to talk, all kind of crazy stuff.
Never a good time to bring that up.
You're very intelligent, man. And I'm like an old Van Halen head, and I'm just like long hair, drinking beer, smoking weed kind of guy when I was a kid. Now I hear you, man. It's really impressive.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. We do it all for you.
Got it, Diamond. Take it easy, man.
Porque te queremos. Porque? Because we love you. 866-313-3733. TheDavidLeeRothShow.com or DavidLeeRoth.com. We're Roth Radio, and we are broadcasting from the nerve center of our gangland stronghold right here in Manhattan. And we flatten Philadelphia, Dallas, Boston, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, West Palm Beach with the strongest known signal in the history of the sport. And we're going to use that. Who do we got here? Let's go from the bottom up. The economics of euthanasia. Byron, you're on Roth Radio. The spotlight is on you. Go ahead, babe.
Hey, what's up? Well, I have two issues, but the first part of it is the economical part of it. I think that nurse or whatever, April, hit on as far as it being a business, because I had some in-laws that they had to make a choice on their relative and what to do, and you know, I guess it was very costly, and you know, that ended up becoming a deciding factor on whether or not, you know, the person was going to continue on, like you're saying, prolonging life.
For example, if you have somebody with accelerated Alzheimer's and they can't function at all, they can't feed themselves, et cetera, do you feel that it's a religious or a moral obligation to continue their life? Or is there a conversation? Well, this is a person who can't have a conversation, right? So do you maintain this person or do you put them out of their misery? I'm not taking a side on this. I'm asking you the question.
Well, exactly, and that's actually great because it was right into the religious aspect of it. I mean, if you are, I mean, not that I'm a big aficionado as far as all religions are concerned, but if you think of some of the Eastern philosophies or religions, even if you look at it as far as Christianity is concerned, you know, the body doesn't matter anyway. It's all about your soul.
And you're saying that once the soul is gone, then all is really lost?
Correct.
I don't know that I disagree with you. I got to wonder that if I had Alzheimer's. Actually, I just read a book on Alzheimer's, and I can't remember where I put it. But if I had Alzheimer's, come on, I got to throw a little in. A little salt in the rice. It's the Roth Show. Come on. It's not a civics lesson. But if, in fact, I had Alzheimer's, and I couldn't feed myself, I couldn't care for myself, or anything like that, put me on the drip. Give me the morphine drip, man. Let me slip off into one beautiful Saturday night. What do you think of that?
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, the medical business is still a business, And if you're able to, you know, ride off into the sunset, knowing that you lived your life however you're supposed to live it, then so be it.
I agree with you. Thanks for calling. 866-313-3733. I'm going to try. You want to go to spots on this?
Yes.
Look at Hutch. He feels like killing himself. We dragged right over the spot here.
No.
Sasha, pull his plug.
Yeah, pull the plug, Sasha. It's right we'll here.
Don't go away.
Pull this.
Don't go
Not
away.
Not that plug.
We'll be right
David
back
Lee
after
Roth in the mornings.
David Lee Roth. Yakuza.
Roth Radio, baby. 866-313-3733. Does my dog love me? This got the phones to light up even more than euthanasia. Animal thought the euthanasia issue was about the Chinese kids coming over here and taking all the disc jockey jobs. It's not. Well, we couldn't come to any real conclusive decision as far as euthanasia. We had a whole lot of balance as far as pro and con and religious and non-religious, realistic, pragmatic. Not even sure what that really means, but we had one of those two. And then we got into the subject of our pets. And you said you had
And nobody in the studio is speaking anymore.
No, everybody. Yeah.
Robin hates me
I'll
now.
I'll speak.
Okay.
I'll speak. I had a very similar experience with a dog, same as you, very emotional, had to have her put to sleep, cancer of the spleen. It was a whole horrible thing. I kind of agree with Dave.
What kind of dog was it?
Otherwise, you'll throw a Sharpie at me.
No. Mm-hmm. What kind of dog was it?
She was a mutt. She was a husky shepherd.
And how many years did you have her?
12 and a half.
Okay. Do you resent the word when I say it?
No, not at all.
A lot of people do.
No. I call her she.
No, I don't resent that.
I call her she.
If I talk about your cat that you love dearly, which I'm not making fun of, and I say it, did you love it? Does that?
No, it doesn't bother me.
If you had a daughter and I say, do you love it?
That wouldn't bother me.
No.
Well, you're calibrated very differently.
So it's consistent.
You are calibrated very differently.
If I had a daughter, it probably would be an it, so...
That's like when a family calls, you know, you have a baby, you have a name, Joey or whatever, and then they call it the baby.
Okay, and your dog was a member of the family, or was this a real dog?
Oh, no, this was a real dog, and it was my dog.
Slept outside, sat when you told it, was a guard dog, barked when the burglar came, the whole thing.
Did all the latter, didn't sleep outside, slept at my feet.
Okay, so this was a member of the family, this was a close friend, all right?
Yes,
do you think your friend loved you?
Yes, I do.
Like on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most possible love that a human being can have for another human being, how much?
Oh, I know a few people that would bear me out on this one, too. I would say 9 at least.
Mm-hmm.
And you were the one who routinely fed the animal.
Me and Donna, my wife, who eventually became my wife, who knew the dog for the first probably 10 years.
Okay, because there is a complete different school of thinking. I have a cousin who's a veterinarian. She's been a veterinarian for very many years. And she maintains that animals have no capacity for love. I'm not taking a side here. She says that animals do not love you, particularly your dogs and your cats. Anybody who thinks that your cat loves you is crazy.
Well,
that's what she says.
How do you explain when you come home and you're in, not you, but me, and you're in a foul mood and the world has treated you like a piece of trash all day and you're just sort of out of it, and the dog comes up to you, and my dog's 60 pounds, and she's a mutt as well, and she just looks at you and leans 60 pounds of dog body weight into you.
I can tell you exactly what's happening. As though it loves you is the word though. As though.
Okay, how do you explain that?
It's a dominant move because you're sitting in a weak physical position. Your comportment is weak and submissive. You're feeling beaten.
No way.
Stop. You just described. So you're coming home beaten, literally beaten, a crummy day at the end. Your shoulders are slumped. You feel sad. You feel turmoil. The dog senses that instantly and puts a complete dominant move on you. If they don't jump up onto you and put their hands on your chest, then they will lean against you to the side. They start a herding move like the Rottweilers do. Or... if you're sitting on the chair, that dog will come up, literally put its paws on your knees. That's a dominance move because at that point it perceives your weakness.
Why do you think? First of all, my dog is a trained dog and she knows what the chain of command is in the house.
Kind of like that tiger that belonged to Siegfried and Roy.
No. But it's, you know, it's me, the dog, then Nick. But why would the dog, want to dominate me at that point.
Because
especially if, as you're saying, I feed the dog, I love the dog, I bathe the dog, I, you know, whatever.
Because dogs live in the moment. They're very zen. They don't have long memories that include all kinds of details of behavior. They live right in the moment. And it's all about who's the man now, whether it's a female or a male. That's with canines. I don't know about cats, but it's all about the dominant gene, whether it's male or female, whether it's a little cacahuete, a little peanut,
chihuahua.
A little chihuahua, or a full-blast pit bull hood hound, all right? It's the same issue. They are watching you 110% of the time. At the first sign of comported weakness, behavioral weakness, that dog is going to exercise its instinctual option. It's imperative.
But don't you think you're projecting who you are? Like, why isn't it possible that the dog has some sort of empathy?
Because when
how could a dog have empathy?
How could why would you think it wouldn't?
It's a living
creature. Why would you think that it wouldn't be somewhat empathic? And I'm not saying that it is, but I'm just saying, if you're saying that it's dominance and you're saying that the dog just wants to be number one because it's sensing weakness, why isn't it just as possible that the dog has some sort of empathic feelings?
It has things it can sense, but empathy is a human emotion that we understand, and there's a long list of things that get to where we have empathy.
Why is it any more crazy than it wants to be dominant?
Well, then why aren't they making cars and buildings like we are?
Because they don't have thumbs. I mean, that makes no sense at all. But let me ask you a question.
No, they can't think.
Stop. Guys, you're talking over each other. Knock it off.
Let me ask you a question. I've been away from home for a few weeks now. I'm going to go home. My dog hasn't seen me. Is she going to remember me?
Certainly. You're the provider of food and care.
But she goes to daycare. My husband's there. She has cats living there. She's got her grandma living next door.
She'll forget all of those as soon as you show up. You're the primary caregiver. You were there in the beginning, or you have intervened if you got her from the pound. Let's find out what Ronnie thinks about this. Number 13, 866-313-3733. Ronnie, David Lee.
Hey, what's up?
Go ahead. Tell me what you're thinking.
All right, if you're talking about a common, like hamster or rabbit, yeah, I can understand where you're coming from. But otherwise, I agree with Robin.
In which context?
You look at, say you get the flu. You're laying in bed, can't move, whatever, because you're sick.
Position of weakness.
That's fine, but there's multiple people in the house that feed this animal. One does morning feeding, one does evening feeding.
If you're the weakest one, they're going to go for you first. Dogs have a weak mentality.
There's more to it than that.
Please reacquaint me.
You're looking at it. You're sitting down in the living room. Your dog comes over and puts their head on your lap.
Food, please.
There's no love there. There's no commitment there. It's just, oh, well, you...
Oh, I didn't say there's no commitment. If you're the one who feeds me, I'll die for you. My loyalty will be unbending.
But even still, it's done to people who do not feed this animal.
And
it's a sign of commitment and feeling.
Why would the dog come over take a nap on your lap? She does that all the time.
Exhaustion from you not giving it food. Thanks for calling. 866-313-3733, DavidLeeRoth.com, or the DavidLeeRothShow.com. We're talking to a lot of animal lovers. I have loved animals. I've owned many, many different kinds of animals. Everything from horses to little tiny doggies. Not little tiny, but cats. Hamsters. I used to have rats when I was back in, those little pet rats, whatever, when I was back in high school. The entire gamut, okay? And I've had trained animals and I've had completely untrained animals. And I've had this discussion with a variety of different folks, okay? And veterinarian in that department, too. And you get both opinions. I don't know either way, but I kind of swing towards, Cesar Millan? Do you know who that is? The dog trainer?
Yes, I do.
The owner of the Dog Psychology Center. He's on the television to learn channel or whatever it is. Great resource. This is what he's preaching. This is his idea as well. I didn't develop this because of his doctrine, but he maintains the exact same routine. Women routinely sit with these little barking I call them peanut dogs.
The chihuahuas, the little bichons.
Yeah,
stuff,
the little, right? And they're barking, and it's biting her son. And she's going, but the dog has feelings and so forth. So no, just hasn't been trained.
That's a problem with her, and she's an idiot, and she shouldn't have had kids, if you ask me. If you can't train a dog, what are you going to do with your kids?
Most people don't train their dogs at all, much less their kids.
Well, that's really irresponsible.
Why would you have
to
train a dog if there's so much love? doesn't love conquer all?
Well, why would you have to train your kids if there's so much love? That's a ridiculous thing to say. If you're going to be a responsible pet owner and you don't want to spend your life in court because your dog is biting people and you don't want to replace your furniture every 2 weeks, you're going to train your dog.
We don't. That's why the pound is full. Roth Radio, 866-313-3733, davidleeroth.com. Send us the email here. We'll just go from the, I don't know, here's a biblical name, Elijah. Let's hear what Elijah says about house pets. Elijah, you're in the spotlight. Let's hear it.
What's up?
Go ahead, my friend. You're on.
Hey, listen, I got two Rottweilers. I'm a longtime dog lover. And it's not only the emotional connection with dogs and people, but it's also the emotional connection between dogs themselves. If anybody who's had a pet that's died of, you know, any kind of disease. I had my girl, my baby girl, Rottweiler's daddy died of cancer, and she was a mess for months and months until I got a puppy. And you can't tell me that there's no emotional connection there. And on top of that, anybody who knows anything about dog psychology knows that they have about the psychological capacity of a three-year-old child. Now, you're going to tell me that a three-year-old child doesn't have love? There's no way any dog lover that has any love for the animals.
I think that the animals have more compassion between each other than they do for the owners. I think that the owners probably put what we expect to have on us. Like my last girlfriend, she used to say, I love you, and it was always Ashley a question. Think on that. you make a good point, my friend. I had some Rottweilers. The same thing happened. 866-313-3733. Is I love you really a question? And is that the question your dog asking? Who knows what that question really is? Who even knows what I just said? When the dog says, I love you, what does she really want? I said it right, finally. Stay right here. I'm going away.
David Lee Roth, weekday mornings.
Добро пожаловать к Дэвиду Ли Руфу. Этим чудесным утром 6 часов. Дэвид Ли Руф для вас, только потому, что мы любим вас.
Animal choice. Ladies to the side of the ring, please. You're going to kill me if I say, let's saddle up now. I love animals, okay? And there's no punchline to that.
Oh, I could think of a few.
Medium rare.
Hey, I eat them too. I'm wearing leather,
You eat chicken, right?
I eat chicken, I eat beef, I eat...
Do you think fish love us? Do you think fish love us?
No, I think fish don't have much brain activity going on.
I can certify that. I can testify to that equitably. And I'll tell you what I did, because I have a goldfish that I got at the Feast of San Gennaro, whatever. I won it at one of those things, the ring toss, whatever. And I have it in a fair-sized bowl. It's a big glass bowl, and it sits near my stereo down in downtown where I live in my apartment. And whenever I play the stereo, you hear what kind of music in the background's going on here. This is all my own music. I bring this stuff in every day. It's all, you know, lively. It's all funky stuff and everything. And I turn the bass up, get the boom going, and... it makes, you know, when you have like a cup of water and it's near the bass speaker and it makes the ripples go like this, and the fish would get crazy, goldfish, and he would start swimming really fast around the aquarium, and I got like afraid that he was going to have like a heart attack or something, because, you know, it was a special day. I was with a special gal, and, you know, I did the ring toss. She didn't want the fish. I keep the fish. She's gone. I have a memory. It's a sentimental thing. So what I did, like, I'm not turning the stereo off. I'm never, you know, I'm not going to stop listening to music or whatever. So what I did the other day before I came to work here is I took three packages of orange Jell-O, and I poured it in the water, and I put the air conditioner on full, and I came to work here. And now when I got home, now everything's copacetic. I can turn the bass on full, and all I can do, I can go and tink the thing like, come on, boy. Come on, boy. And it takes him about 20 minutes to get from one side of the bowl to the other. It's like aerobic. Now he's like, he's all buff. Plus, he can come to a complete stop right in the middle of... Why are you looking at me like that? I think he loves me. When I do this...
I think I hate you.
Come on, boy. Come on, boy. It'll take him about 20 minutes to get from one side of the bowl to the other. And when he gets there, man, he loves me. I can tell it in his face. His eyes are all big and he's huffing and puffing. I'm not even sure if it's a he. Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. The David Lee Roth Show.com. DavidLeeRoth.com. Lori, March of the Penguins. I saw that, actually. Are you there, Lori?
I'm here, Dave. How are you?
Did you like the Penguin movie? I loved it.
I did. It was awesome. It was incredible. If humans could be as responsible with their kids as penguins are, we'd be a better race.
I don't know about their responsibility so much with kids, which I found charming. But the most amazing thing to me is that they would go 75 miles through the Arctic tundra to procreate the race. For me, I got to only go to Vegas. Atlantic City, arguably. I prefer Vegas to procreate, but you know. So why are you calling about March of the Penguins? Do you feel that penguins love us?
Well, I don't know about love us, but
they love each other though, right? That's evident.
Absolutely, and that was my point, showing emotion. The one scene where the mother shows emotion after her baby dies.
Completely. And I'm completely with you. I'm not making fun of that at all. Aren't birds more intelligent than dogs? And I do believe they are.
They're more intelligent than most people I know.
Whoa. You sound bitter, Lori, and I like that. Do you own a penguin?
No, I don't. No, I don't.
Okay. That was cruel. But it was intentionally cruel. What kind of pet do you own?
Actually, I own no pets.
Well, why are you weighing in on this?
It's an excuse to talk to you, Dave.
I like it, once again. Okay, now, if you owned a pet, what would you have? Would you even think to own a penguin? Or would you have a dog or a cat or a parakeet, whatever? What would you have?
Which one will do the laundry for me? I don't know.
Whew, you would need a boy toy for that.
Sign me up.
That's funny. I think penguins actually feel that kind of the emotional empathy. They feel the love, whatever. From what I saw on the movie, they look like they walk and talk like human beings. And I do believe that birds are considerably more developed emotionally and intellectually than the average canine is. I used to have a bird. I told you, Evita, a parrot. She said at least 40 different things and changed her voice. The most coolest thing that we ever taught her. She lived at the house when my sister was living over there. We taught her how to go, "Help, I'm a bird." And she would torment those two Rottweilers. I had two sisters who were named after my great aunts, okay, Esther and Clara, because they are noble and PO'd all the time. Scared the gardeners to death, right? And everybody was terrified of these two dogs because they never got trained. I was always on the road. And they never got trained and everything. So they just went after everybody except that bird. They were terrified of that bird because she would talk to him. She'd say the alphabet to him. She would curse him. She'd talk in Spanish at him and everything. And then one day the big earthquake came and I went down into where the bird was, the bird room we call it. And I went, oh no, the door might have flown open on the pantry and the dogs might have got into the bird room. And I went down there and those two dogs were hiding in the corner and that bird was walking right across their legs, right on the floor, just right, with impunity. The same way I walked past Tom Gisano. No eye contact. Who's in charge now, baby? Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. Who else is on here? Victoria, give us a call, 14. Victoria, what's cooking?
How are you? Congratulations on the new show. You're doing a great job.
Okay, what's cooking? What kind of animals do you have?
I have both a dog and a cat, and I have to say the dog absolutely loves you without a doubt. The cat could do without you, doesn't care, just wants to be fed, will come up to you only when she wants to be loved. Other than that, she can have you go out of there and be gone.
So cats are more like strippers.
Oh, absolutely. They only want what they want.
It's all about me. It's all about my.
Absolutely. I have to say, we're going away this weekend, and my dog knows that we're heading out, and he's boycotting us right now. He does. He knows that we're leaving, and he's very upset. He's starting to scratch. He's starting to get all worked up.
won't sit on a lap anymore.
I do believe dogs have a capacity for retribution. They have a capacity for entertainment. They sure know how to have fun. I'm not disincluding any of that. But much like my last girlfriend or two, I don't know if the love is quite up to the level that we might have hoped for. So you say that dogs have that capacity for love all the way, just like human beings do, right?
Absolutely.
Love you, Victoria. Thanks for calling. 866-313-3733. See, did you see what just happened? We had a big doggy come in here and try and exhibit some dominant behavior. And by remaining assertive and calm, he was dismissed, and now he's back in his house. Roth Radio, New York, Philadelphia, Dallas, Boston, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, West Palm Beach. Go ahead. You're on.
Let me ask you about the bird. You're saying that a bird has equal or more capacity than a dog?
Absolutely.
How can you...
Not every bird. Parrots.
Not every bird. Possibly think that when a bird's brain is about the size of a pea...
Has nothing to do with it. Don't talk to me about structural dynamics, or I'm going to point to you how much smaller you are than animal, and I'm going to point to his hat size, which is four times the size of yours, and I'm going to invoke the same nonsense you just sent my way about smaller tissue can retain less information. Go.
Oh, you know what? I will hit you with this tomorrow.
After you've dreamt up some other fake answer. Okay, here we go. Karen, pets over people, number 9, Roth Radio, New York, Philly, Dallas, Boston, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, West Palm Beach. You're on.
Good morning. How are you?
Extraordinary. What's cooking?
Glad this topic came up because I've been having an issue in this area. It's kind of taken a little different direction. I'm dating a guy who seems like he's more into his dog than he is people. And not just me necessarily, but people.
Is that the dog's fault or his fault?
His fault.
And
I wonder.
Oh, wait a minute! Stop. Is he not sharing enough time for you? Is that the issue?
You know, it sounds crazy. I've grown up with pets my whole life, so it sounds like she's just a girl who's. It's not that. I love pets, but this guy dotes on his dog, but then he won't pay that much attention. I don't know. It's like it.
You sound like you're struggling, like the people who don't have as much sex because they're watching too much television. Sounds like you're not getting the attention that the pet is getting.
Probably, but you know, I also wonder to twist that.
So do you come up on all fours and put your head in his lap?
I guess I should, huh?
Hey, it's a logical sequence of thinking.
But you know, I wonder how many other people deal with this. It's not a man or a woman thing, but then I also wonder, is that a psychological reason? Like, is it safer to be really close with your pet than be close to people?
Sure, because your pet doesn't answer back. Your pet's never going to question you. Your pet may turn its head sideways if you show up drunk and it wonders kind of why you're walking weird, but it's never going to get into those issues of why you drink. It's never going to caution you about hangovers or tell you you're going to destroy your life and your family and everybody around you. It'll just kind of whine and wait until you feed it again.
And then is that like another example of a bad thing to find in a relationship because it's somebody who will never, you know what I mean? Like they'll put their love and attention into the pet because they'll never be turned down and it's so much safer, you know?
Same reason I used to date lesbians. It's a finite ending. You're never going to get questioned and sooner or later she's going to wander off back to her pride.
And you know, I mean, for him, he says to me, oh, you're just jealous or why are you being this way, you don't like dogs, and I'm like, I've had dogs my whole life. It's just sometimes there's a line that's crossed. It seems like a little odd.
It sounds to me like you're not getting the attention that the pet is, and that's not really your issue. I made a little fun, but I think that's homeboy's issue a little bit. Are we good to go? Are you signaling me? What are these ugly finger meanings, Hutch?
Oh, those ugly finger meanings. Finger signs mean that I need you to maybe play a little Motown. How about that?
You want to go for that?
Yeah.
Just ain't enough love. I think it's perfectly appropriate for the subject at hand. Just ain't enough love. If you had a good time, tell a friend. If you had a crummy time, tell an enemy. We'll be back tomorrow. Live, naked, hot, steaming and screaming. At least I am in my clothes. Sasha! Just ain't enough love. Ooh, that just love. Ain't enough love.
With tears in my eyes as she walked from my side, I sadly asked her why.
And she said, please, baby, just ain't enough love.
Just ain't enough love.
She said, just ain't enough love.
Just ain't enough love.
And
I was too busy with that girl.
Have a great day.
With this reply, she said,
David Lee Roth, more. Mornings.